let's move, please, from this good piece of work to item number 7.
City Club of Portland Street Funding Presentation.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, for nearly 30 years, the City of Portland has known that we are underinvesting in our transportation infrastructure, and the streets have been gradually crumbling. And every year that we delay, the problem gets worse, because the longer it takes you wait to fix a street, the more expensive it is to fix it. Streets are kind of like teeth. If you don't do regular brushing, flossing, and cleaning, then you get into root canals and extractions. Now, we are poised, finally, to take action. 3 weeks from now, I will bring to council a proposal to send to the voters a temporary 10-cent per gallon gas tax to fund street repairs and traffic safety. Because another issue we have in the city is there's too many places in the city where it is not safe for children to walk or bike to school or for seniors to walk to bus stops because of dangerous intersections or missing pieces of sidewalk. The City Club of Portland has done a great deal to re-energize the discussion about transportation funding and to set the stage for a successful effort with their research report and recommendations. And I am delighted that the City Club and the persons, I believe, of Jennifer Rollins, Chair of the Street Funding Research Committee, and Kristen Eberhard, the lead report writer, I'm glad that they are here today to present the report and discuss their research and their findings and their recommendations.
Great. Thank you very much. Jennifer, Kristen, come on up, please.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Jennifer Rollins, and as Commissioner Novick mentioned, I was the chair of City Club of Portland's research committee that looked at the issue of funding for Portland's streets. And we're really just grateful that you're still willing to listen to us and consider our ideas. And I'm going to turn over the substantive portion to Kristen Eberhard, who is the chief writer of the report and knows the most about it. Kristen?
Thank you. For nearly 30 years, Portland has tried and failed to find the funds it needs to keep roads in good repair. Portland is at the vanguard of becoming a multimodal city, but to maintain that leadership position, we have to find the funds to adequately fund streets. Unfortunately, there's no silver bullet here. Funds from current and future budget surpluses can help. The city gas tax that you have proposed will cover some of the routine maintenance, but those together are still not enough. The city has to implement additional fees, preferably as closely related to street use as possible, to ensure Portland streets serve residents and businesses for decades to come. So our report has more detail, but we just have 4 recommendations for you today. So first, we urge you to place a local gas tax on the May ballot. The City Club of Portland is encouraged that you have taken this initial steps to place the tax on the ballot. We believe that a local gas tax strikes the best balance of efficiency, fairness, and equity of all the options available. The gas tax is a tried and true method for funding streets. 20 other cities have implemented one, and the Oregon Constitution requires that all the money from a gas tax has to be dedicated to roads so the funds are protected. A city gas tax would have a low administrative cost and high compliance rates because we could do what other cities do and have Oregon Department of Transportation collect the gas tax through its existing mechanism and then give it back to us. A gas tax has a strong nexus with street use. For most motorists, the amount they pay is directly related to the amount that they drive. This creates an incentive for more people to get around Portland by walking, biking, and transit, and ride-sharing instead of in a vehicle by themselves, which leads to less congestion, less pollution, better health, and fewer injuries from crashes. Additionally, any new revenue mechanism we think needs to seriously consider the impact it will have on those in Portland who are least able to pay. So 2 advocacy organizations we met with, Opal and Oregon Walks, told us that low-income people in Portland are more dependent on walking, biking, and buses compared to higher-income people who are more car-dependent. Nationwide, households with the highest income of income spend 4 times as much as lower-income households on gas, meaning that higher-income households would pay more for a gas tax than lower-income households. they would still pay less as a percentage of their income. So a gas tax is not progressive, but it is much less regressive than a flat household fee. So we asked the city to unanimously place a 10-cent local gas tax on the May ballot. Our second recommendation is to look for additional local revenue streams, and we have a few we'd like you to look at. So implementing the gas tax is just part of the solution. Our report concludes that the city can't address street maintenance backlog or implement the important Vision Zero safety improvements that it needs without new revenue sources. So when we were looking at the other options, we asked ourselves two questions. First, does the mechanism capture the most revenue from those who drive the most? And second, does the funding place an unethical or inequitable burden on Portlanders who are least able to pay? So based on these considerations, we have three recommendations. First, a value and weight-based vehicle registration fee. A vehicle registration fee captures a basic relationship between vehicle use and road use and paying, but the current flat fee that we have is regressive because low-income households pay the same amount as high-income households and heavy trucks are exempted. So we would recommend a more equitable arrangement where you index the vehicle registration fee to the weight and value of the vehicle. So more expensive vehicle owners who have already proved their ability to pay would pay more than low income. Second, we recommend a commuter payroll tax. This is something that Commissioner Novick mentioned to us during our research. It would be a $2 per month payroll tax on non-Portland residents who work in Portland. It has a couple of benefits. First, $2 is pretty low relative to total payrolls. And second, it would capture money from non-Portland residents who wouldn't be paying other taxes. And finally, because it would be assessed on non-Portland residents, its success at the ballot would be likely. Our final recommendation is parking permits and fees. So right now, the city subsidizes private car ownership by allowing private vehicles to park for free on a public asset. You recently had a report from a stakeholder advisory committee about parking registration fees that told you you could do it on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis so that it would be based on local ability to pay, and it would let neighborhoods choose the street and safety improvements that are most important to their neighborhood. Parking registration permits are a relatively fair means of raising revenue because only owners of vehicles would be charged. So our third recommendation is to commit to spending 50% of future budget surpluses on maintaining infrastructure. So we were happy to see that the council committed 50% of last year's budget surplus to infrastructure maintenance, and we urge you to commit to do the same for future years. Now, we realize that the city has other urgent priorities, like the housing crisis, but we think that committing 50% of surpluses to maintenance is important for a couple reasons. First, it's fiscally prudent. Deferring infrastructure maintenance doesn't just put those costs off to a future year, but it actually increases the cost that you're going to have to pay. So spending money on infrastructure maintenance now rather than later saves money for other priorities like housing, parks, and police. Second, it builds trust. So during our research, we heard from witnesses that voters don't trust that the city is actually prioritizing streets. Now, there's always going to be people who criticize your spending priorities, no matter what they are, but the criticism on or mistrust on this issue seemed to be more widespread, and there were a few reasons that we heard. First, people think that streets are a core city function, so they expect that the city is always spending money on those. So when they learned that the city has actually been putting off prudent maintenance for decades, they were shocked and felt like the city was shirking its duties. And second, when people heard about the street crisis last year, they expected to first see a change in city priorities before the city asked them to reach into their pockets for new fees or taxes. So the feeling seemed to be, if the city isn't digging deep, why should we have to dig? So by dedicating 50% of your budget surplus last year, the city council sent the message to voters that the city really is taking this seriously, that you are changing your priorities, and that you are putting your money where their mouth is. Making a commitment to do the same for future years would strengthen that signal and build voters' trust that they can vote for a gas tax in May.
So But just so you know, the resolution was for 4 years, so we're going to continue doing that for at least this year and the next two.
Okay, great.
And it's limited to one-time money, not the ongoing money. So it's 50% of the one-time money.
Right.
And it's for maintenance, but not just transportation maintenance. All maintenance, as you know.
Right. Infrastructure maintenance, we think, is important.
Transportation, parks, and emergency management.
So our final recommendation is that Portland needs to engage in Salem. So Salem holds the keys to several of the potential funding sources that we've identified. But in 2015, legislators from the Portland area didn't take a leadership role in promoting the city's needs in the statewide transportation package. So this year, we would urge Portland leaders to talk with your colleagues in the legislature to make sure that in 2017, when the transportation package is back on the table, Portland representatives play a key role. So the League of Oregon Cities could be an important ally in this. In 2015, the League lobbied for many of the things that Portland needs, including a gas tax that's indexed to inflation so it doesn't keep losing value until the next legislative battle to raise taxes, and local authority to raise local funds. So our recommendation of a value and weight-based vehicle registration fee right now is preempted by state law, so you need the legislature to give you the authority to do that. The League did not argue for a reallocation of highway funds, but that could be a goal for Portland to try and get next year. Cities own about 25% of the roads in Oregon, and cities accommodate the vast majority of the people in Oregon, yet cities get less than 20% of the highway fund. So asking for 25% could be appropriate. So in conclusion, all Portland residents and businesses depend on safe and well-maintained city streets. To keep those safe and well-maintained, we urge you to vote unanimously to place a 10-cent local gas tax on the ballot, to identify additional local revenue streams, to commit to dedicating 50% of future budget surpluses, and to engage in Salem to get the authority that you need for a local vehicle registration fee.
Great. Thank you. Questions?
What led you to believe that the City of Portland didn't engage and that our legislators didn't engage at the legislature last year on the transportation funding issue?
That was something that we heard from witnesses, that there could have been a bigger voice in that transportation discussion.
I personally was down there 9 times advocating for transportation funding, so I
we were loud.
Yeah, and certainly COTEC was a leader, and several legislators were, so certainly from our perspective, it didn't seem like it was for lack of trying, and it's going to be high on our agenda for this coming session.
Yeah, and actually, it's always important to remember the history, and of course the City Club report, you did a good job in your report of explicating that, but we were requested by the governor and the Speaker of the House to take no further action on a local transportation measure during the 2015 session so they could act on a transportation funding measure, and we obviously acceded to that request and continued to advocate for passage of the state transportation bill. That unfortunately didn't happen. And apparently, based on what I've heard so far from legislative leaders, they're not planning on it happening this year either. So that's pretty disappointing, almost as disappointing as Congress, which has not done anything on this subject for decades. So we will continue to advocate. Your instruction is heard and accepted. We will continue to advocate that the legislature and the federal government do their part as well. But obviously, having the City Club weigh in, as you have, is an important civic statement from the community that needs to happen. So we appreciate you raising that.
And thank you for your efforts. I'm sorry I didn't know how loud you were being. But just to reiterate, part of what we would ask you to do is not just ask them to do their part, but to free you up to do
yes,
your part.
And to not,
we have
and
a
to
big list of things
us.
That we want them to start preempting us, yes. Which leads me to my next question. You mentioned about moving away from the flat registration fee. That's county, right? That's who has the authority to change that?
So right now the county does. So our recommendation is to ask the legislature to let the city have authority.
Interesting.
Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah, the preemptions are a big problem in a number of areas, housing as well. So I appreciate you raising that point.
A couple questions. First, I really appreciate the City Club coming in, presenting after they've issued a report. This is the third or fourth time in a number of years where this has happened. Once upon a time, a City Club used to issue reports, but they didn't come to council. So I think this next step is really essential, and thank you for your time and your diligence. I have the abbreviated version of your report, And so I don't have the list of witnesses. How many people actually participated and testified in support of this this report?
It's going to take me a second, but I've got the report here.
Okay.
I'll get that for you.
I want to offer just an observation about the word trust. And I appreciate that you made an observation about people some of the people you heard from don't trust that will spend the money wisely. In 7 years in this job, what I've learned is that increasingly people couch a policy disagreement in terms of trust. Once upon a time, adults would come and say, I disagree with you. Now they say, I don't trust you. And we hear it most loudly, just to give you some feedback, about investing in bicycles, light rail, streetcar, and that's where we're often told we don't trust your spending priorities. So I want to caution about reading into the trust piece more globally something, because what we increasingly find is a legitimate, good faith policy disagreement couched as a trust issue. And increasingly, I think it's actually toxic to government that every time you have a disagreement, you couch it as a trust issue, because what you're doing is kind of getting into a personal kind of dispute, rather than simply saying, I have a disagreement about where you're going to invest your money. But again, the most vocal segment of opposition we hear in transportation funding, in my experience, around bikes and alternatives, is couched as a trust issue. So I think we have to weigh that. I'm not saying we don't deserve to get dinged for spending priorities or for how we've spent money in the past, but I caution reading too much into the trust argument, because it's become a catch-all for just a disagreement. To the extent you've made some very thoughtful recommendations here about alternative funding sources, how important was it in your consideration to balance the administrative overhead of actually collecting the funds as part of your recommendation? Because one of the things we learned in the last debate was there are some options on the table where the cost of collecting and the compliance issues really outweigh the benefit. So how important was that as a screen for your evaluation of the several options you've come forward with?
Well, so to answer your first easy question, we had 21 witnesses.
Okay, so that's not an insignificant number in a city, but in a city of 600,000, I don't know whether it's representative of the city, but at least 21 people were motivated enough to testify.
And we took administrative costs into consideration. We had in our long 90-page report a decision matrix, and one of the factors was administrative costs, and there were lots of great suggestions that we rejected because we thought compliance would be low or the cost to administer a brand-new program that there was no infrastructure for already in place would eat up any new funding. So there were plenty of ideas that we rejected just out of pocket based on that consideration.
With respect to the gas tax, I remember a couple of years ago when we were having this debate and looking at that as an option, there were some ideas the community pitched to us about how to make it less regressive, how you might provide subsidies and how you might administer them through cards or through a credit card type system or a debit card system or something else. Did you consider any of those options in your review of how to limit, mitigate the inequities of a gas tax by subsidizing directly or indirectly lower-income customers?
I don't recall any discussions about subsidizing lower-income people with respect to the gas tax. We looked at a lot of ways that we could subsidize the TUF, a flat fee. but I don't think we talked to any witnesses, and we talked a lot about gas tax, about a card program or any of the programs that you're mentioning. Do you recall anything, Christine?
Yeah, the low-income representatives that we talked to didn't bring up that, but they did emphasize that it would be important that money collected through gas tax be spent in ways that also benefit people who are not car-dependent so that the impact on them was beneficial, but they didn't talk about a direct way of subsidizing them.
Commissioner, yeah. Of course, one issue with the gas tax is under the state constitution, it's dedicated to road work, so we couldn't physically take any money from the gas tax and set it as rebates to lower-income people. We will be proposing to spend a goodly chunk of the non-paving money in our proposal in areas which are deficient in infrastructure like sidewalks and safe intersections, and those are largely concentrated in the lower income areas of the city.
So how you entirely. Use the money has the effect. Yeah. Last question, and it's about vehicle registration fees. In 2004, when I once upon a time was a candidate for unsuccessfully for this job, I actually talked about raising vehicle registration fees. My opponent put it in the voters' pamphlet because it pulled off the charts as a negative. My opponent later became a very distinguished transportation commissioner in charge. But at the time, the polling apparently indicated that if you tagged me with it, it was not well received east of 82nd Street. Fast forward. We cobbled together a package to fund Selwood Bridge, which would have required Clackamas County to do a modest increase in vehicle registration fee, and I believe that was overturned by referendum. Do we have any sense, empirical evidence, that the public is more willing generally to consider a vehicle registration fee increase for this purpose?
You mean a gas tax?
No, the vehicle registration fee.
Vehicle registration fee. Oh, I see. As the next item.
They had other yeah. I think, okay. creative options. But do we have any... Do we have any information that the public is more receptive than they might have been in the past to raising the vehicle registration fee to cover these costs?
So as a committee, we really didn't have the ability to engage any sort of polling. And we did talk to the folks that did polling for the city and some other public interest, public polling groups. And we didn't have any specific data like that. What does poll well in this area is tax that someone else pays, of course. And then my sense was that overall ideas that would were progressive. So our hope was that a more progressive form of a registration fee where someone who has...
Based on the value of the car.
Has some ability to buy an expensive car or weight based on use. So someone that has a very heavy vehicle is putting more wear and tear in the street. So we're hopeful, and perhaps that is reflective of some naivete on my part, but my hope was that that would tie into the sense that it was fair and progressive and that that would appeal to Portland voters.
Maybe we could have a progressive scale and then have a supercharge for anyone driving a Hummer.
Exactly.
Because last I, in my neighborhood, Hummers take up two lanes. So I think that would be a super duper charge for that.
And maybe you could drum up support in your neighborhood for that. It might pull well.
Anyway, thank you for your presentation. It's
a questions.
Treat for us to have the City Club come and present.
You know, we appreciate this tradition, as Commissioner Fish said, of having City Club reports presented here, communicated to us, but also to the larger community this way. Obviously, the City Club does that well itself, and OPB helps, but it's great that we have this tradition, and we're glad you're willing to come here and have this kind of dialogue in public with us and with the community. So,
thank you for having us today.
Other questions?
I just wanted to say I really appreciate the work you put into this. When you released your report, it gave a real shot in the arm to efforts to revisit the issue of finding adequate funding for transportation. Thank you for pointing out that the state currently prohibits us from having any kind of vehicle registration fee. That is definitely something on our agenda. Did want to note that last year, or actually in this budget year, the city is committing more general fund transportation adjusted for inflation than any time since 1985. So I think we've begun overcoming those 30 years of disinvestment since we did have some one-time money available. And finally, I just wanted to add one more item to your list of possible additional ways to raise revenue for transportation in a fair way, which is studded tires impose inordinate wear and tear on the roads. I've talked with the chairs of each of the counties in the Tri-County area about the possibility of having a sales tax on studded tires, which I think you'd have to have in all three counties, otherwise people would just drive across the border to get them, and all of them expressed interest in that. So that's something I could continue to pursue with them as well, and I'd appreciate your support of that. Thank you so much.
I just have one further clarifying question, because I'm not sure that you meant what you wrote in the report on under the recommendations, number 11. Portland should not saddle all taxpayers with the bill for capital projects that primarily or exclusively benefit a few people and businesses. Bridges primarily benefiting the people driving across the bridge, and streetcar projects primarily benefit the businesses located near the line. If the people and businesses are not willing to pay for the benefits they receive, the city should forego the project rather than siphon money away from things that benefit Portlanders more broadly, such as street maintenance and safety. How does that, I don't understand how that would comport in areas where the neighbors and the businesses can't pay. Like the huge infrastructure maintenance that we need to do on Powell and 122nd and some of the places where there just isn't the capacity of the local folks to pay, even if the rest of us don't necessarily drive those streets very much.
Can I address that? We're not talking about infrastructure maintenance. We're talking about capital projects. So we specifically think that that money should be going to infrastructure maintenance in areas around the city, but not to new projects.
But the problem is that East Portland and Deep Southwest Portland don't have the infrastructure, so they don't get maintenance. They need the capital projects in order to be able to have city standard streets. So did you look at that issue as part of your discussions? That I understand the point about the streetcar, and indeed the businesses along the streetcar and the properties were assessed additionally for those services. But what about the equity of providing services for infrastructure in places that don't have them and can't afford to pay for them?
I guess we're drawing a distinction between infrastructure like paving streets or creating sidewalks that create safety and new infrastructure projects that only benefit a very specific group of people like the streetcar.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's an issue that I guess if the City Club is going to continue working on transportation issues, which I bet you will, we hope that you will help us think about as well, which is if, as he says, you will do, the commissioner brings a proposal to this council to send a gas tax to the voters, we'll have a hearing on that and take action on it. That will fund additional work in maintenance and in safety. However, we still have a giant unfunded liability in transportation, and that the city annexed large areas in the 80s and 90s where the county had permitted homes to be built on cesspools with dirt streets out in front of them. We installed sewers at great expense there, those residents and everyone else, to put sewers into the largest unsewered area in the United States. We used to call it Mid-Multnomah County. And now we call it East Portland. And we still have only built a few of the 55 miles of unbuilt streets that we were gifted with when those areas were required to be annexed to the city of Portland by the State Environmental Quality Commission. So we still have this big problem, community problem, of unbuilt streets. And it happens that in many parts of that unbuilt network, the residents who live on those streets are well below the average of household income. There are a few places where there are wealthy people living on bad streets, but mostly it's the other way around. It's people with little means to form a local improvement district and pay $20,000 for their share of building the street that never was. So that's a huge problem for Portland. We've put a little bit of money in the general fund budget this year towards that goal, and have asked the Transportation Bureau to start developing a program to start systematically addressing that beyond local improvement districts. The Bureau does a great job of working with property owners to form local improvement districts, but at the rate of progress that way, I think it's going to take about 300 years to build out that network. So
I think Commissioner Fritz's point is well taken. I don't think that the intent of the report was to put neighborhoods in a position of being neglected because they're low-income neighborhoods. I think the thrust of that argument was to say that you should take care of existing problems before taking money to build new projects that might only benefit a small area of the city. And I think that was partly to address the idea that greater and greater portions of PBUD's budget is going to debt service for very specific projects. And really wanting to preserve as much money as possible to benefit the most people as possible, not to segregate a neighborhood.
Yeah, good point. Other questions or comments or requests of the City Club? We're being awfully demanding of you since you're a volunteer. but the City Club plays such an important role. And again, this dialogue that we have here when you present reports, I think is really helpful to us, really helpful to the community in airing these issues. So we hope you're always willing to do this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. So this is not an action item. We don't have to take a vote on it, and we won't be taking testimony today on this, though obviously it's the 28th.
That's not what we were told.
I'm sorry. Hang on a minute, folks.
We waited 2 hours to testify.
Hang on.
Okay.
hang on. Let me explain. It's a communications item. We have someone communicating to the council, just like we do at the beginning of each council meeting. So it wasn't my intention to take testimony today. There's no action before the city council today on this subject, but it's going to be on the 28th. Is that right?
The 27th.
27th. So we will be taking Commissioner Novick's proposal up on 27th.
If you need to have the opposition come and say something.
No, if you want to take up an argument with the city club.
Here we go, dictator.
If you want to have a debate, excuse me, if you want to have a debate with the city club, go debate the city club. It's their report. If you want to debate, excuse me, if you want to.
We should have a right to say something.
And you will.
Testimony.
You'll have a right to come speak on action when it's in front of the council.
Transparency.
You'll have a right to come speak on the council's action when the council's taking action. So we're going to move on to the next.
No!
We're going to move on to the next item, folks. Sorry, we're going to move on.
Leave your seats. Go away.
We're going to move on. So we're going to move on to the next item, which is number 8. Item number 8.